Can you feel the heat down in your soul?
I feel the heat down in my soul.
Can you see the heat there in control?
I see the heat there in control.
Can you feel it?
I feel it.
Can you see it?
I see it.
It's Miami Heat. We can be beat. It's Miami Heat. It's
All right, welcome to episode number 14 of the Triple H Podcast. I'm your host, well, today's host, Ernest E.J. Christian, alongside my my buddy, my friend, my pal, my teammate, Dave Ramil, a writer also at HotHoops.com. Dave, what's going on?
Not much, Ernest. Looking forward to seeing what your hosting capabilities are like, man. I know you run your own podcast, but this should be an interesting two-man team that we've got going here.
Yeah, I mean, Haley, we miss you. Hope we get back soon. Hopefully next week. But we haven't done a pod in a long time. I mean, this is the first pod we've done, actually, I think, in 32 days. I just looked at the numbers, and last show we did, I think, February 11th. So it's, been a while, but we're back.
Quite a gap.
A lot has happened in the last month, since the last pod. I believe the last time we did the pod was... it was before the All-Star break. I think literally before the All-Star break. And let's say a lot's happened. And I know you hate the term Heat Nation, but I'll say it Heat Nation since then. I mean, we've lost players. We've gained an All-Star caliber player. We've had some maturity issues with Hassan Whiteside. We've had a lot of things go on in Miami. So let's go and break it down. First off, the biggest thing, obviously, that's happened in the last 30 days has been obviously acquiring Goran Dragic from Phoenix in exchange for pretty much pieces that really didn't fit here in Miami. We're talking about Sean Williams, Norris Cole, those guys. Dragic to Miami. Let me ask you a question. Have you seen a difference in this team since that trade?
Well, I mean, I think logistically we're talking about a team that was ranked at the bottom of the NBA in terms of total pace, total shots per game, et cetera. That's picked up pretty substantially. I don't have the numbers right here, but you can tell that this is a team that's more capable of scoring. They're quicker. They're pushing the ball up the floor. I think he's taken a little step back, kind of an adjustment period there from when he first came on board. He wanted to, really try to do as much as he possibly could to show the team and the fans what he was capable of. And so that was, that led to some awkward, rushed moments there. But what we've seen lately is that he's understood how the pace works, but he's also made it consistently faster. So you look at him bringing the ball up, and we haven't had a point guard of this caliber in years. Maybe not since Jason Williams, maybe even before that to Tim Hardaway. We haven't had a point guard who really knows how to control the tempo, who knows how to get his teammates involved. And that's by design. We had a facilitator in Dwayne Wade. We had another one in LeBron James. So it wasn't necessarily such a big priority, but it's great to see somebody like Dragic who comes in and really knows how to lead the team, especially offensively.
Yeah, it's great, too, because I mean, he's put a jolt in this Heat offense. I mean, it's one of those things where, we were excited about this team coming to the year, but to say it's been a failed year for the Heat. It's been what you call a lost season. Now, granted, this team couldn't make the playoffs, and maybe, who knows, maybe they get second win and catch some confidence and maybe win a playoff series. Who knows? I mean, I doubt that, but that's just anything can happen, But I will say this, though. When you talk about the Dragic trade, I think what we think about, I know you and I discussed this off the record, we're thinking in the long term. I mean, it's evident that Miami brought him here not just for 1 year, not just to make the playoffs and to do something this year. Obviously, when Riley made this move, it was in the effort to build for the next couple of years. Looking at this trade, a lot of analysts have said that this gave this trade an A+. A lot of people said this is a great move for Miami going forward. I mean, obviously, you don't have Chris Bosh, who had blood clots in his lungs, so he's not here for a year. So obviously, we were robbed that opportunity to see him and Bosh work together. But a lot of the narrative now is the long-term capabilities of Miami going forward. A lot of people think the Miami Heat will be a top four team where we thought they would have been this year in the Eastern Conference moving forward. I think we can assume, I mean, obviously, nothing's ever absolute in this business. But assuming Dragic is here for the next 3, 4, 5 years, where do you see Miami in the pecking order of the Eastern Conference?
Well, a couple of things. One, I want to bring up the whole Bosch move. It's interesting. I saw a piece that came out just this morning regarding the whole acquisition of Goran Dragic. Pat Riley, in an interview with Bleacher Report's Ethan Skolnick, revealed that he knew about Chris Bosch's limitations this season before he even pulled the trigger on the trade. So clearly we've seen a pattern here from Riley that he wants to build something long-term. And we saw in another piece with Dragic that he's interested in staying here long-term. So we know nothing's been finalized. Obviously he has to sign a deal once this offseason rolls around, but assuming that he stays long-term, this could be a really, really good team. And I think part of that is the fact that we have arguably the best starting five or in the Eastern Conference. I think you've got a talented all-star core there with Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, and Goran Dragic, assuming he stays. Luol Deng is under contract next year as well, assuming he doesn't opt out, which I don't think he will. And then all of a sudden you've got Hassan Whiteside there, who is arguably the best center in the Eastern Conference. So I can't see how you could say that Miami isn't one of the top starting units in the league at this point, and definitely in the Eastern Conference. So then you take it a step further and you look at everything that's happened this season, and not by design, but rather because of because of just happenstance, you've had to develop players. We've talked about this a number of times. You've got Tyler Johnson, who's coming in there, giving a breath of fresh air. You've got Michael Beasley, who's coming in and being productive. Udonis Haslam's always going to do what he can. Chris Anderson's already under contract next year. But you have a good core there. You've got a pretty strong reserve group that has a little bit veteran leadership, has some consistency, has some youth. Hopefully James Ennis continues to develop, Shabazz Napier, etc. Even Mario Chalmers, he's settling back into that six-man role under which he thrived earlier this season. This looks like a really strong team, and I would definitely put this among the top teams in the Eastern Conference. I don't see how Chicago can continue being in that conversation, given the injury to Derrick Rose. I know he's coming back at some point this year, but it looks like it's going to be an ongoing thing for the rest of his career. I don't think we can ever count on him being there for the long term, because you just never know what could happen. He's already made statements to the effect that he doesn't want to be limited by injury once he retires from the game, so I don't know that he's going to be able to play 82 games, even if he was physically capable of doing so. Toronto and Washington, Toronto and Washington, as good a core as they may have, I don't know if we've seen enough from them to argue that a consistent great team. Atlanta caught everybody by surprise, and they still have some free agency issues. Is it sustainable? I think so. I think they could, if they can bring that team back together next year, given the system that's in place there, I think they'll still be one of the top teams in the East. Cleveland, we've seen this pattern in Miami over the last few years. As long as they can keep filtering players in and out of their rotation, they'll be good to go whenever you have a talent as great as LeBron James. Kyrie Irving is a really great player. Kevin Love, that's the question mark, I think, in Cleveland. I see him signing there long term, but he's never going to be as, let's say, versatile and consistent a player as Chris Bosh is. But having said that, you have to definitely include Miami in the consideration. They're one of the top teams in the East.
One of the things that's not being discussed here too, and I think because we are so short sighted when it comes to a lot of the things, when we're still adjusting to that post Big Three era and whatnot. Within the struggle with Miami, what's happening here too, I think, and you mentioned it, sort of teased a little bit with your last statement there, is that Miami's kind of, people were saying, though, with the Dragic trade, that, the great starting five, but the bench is not, they're not deep enough. What's happening, I think, this year, and what you're seeing this year, at least right now, and it's not absolute either, because there's still a lot to be worked on, but what you're seeing Spoelstra do is actually building a bench, building a second unit. Seeing a Tyler Johnson and hopefully Michael Beasley, who can finally get together. Maybe even Henry Walker. Don't call me Bill, but Henry Walker. Miami is trying to figure out who could be, okay, forget this year, who could be their second unit next year and beyond. So even in the struggle, there's still opportunity. So this is why you see a Tyler Johnson and these guys. I think Whiteside came about. I mean, that came out by chance. If Miami was playing good basketball, if McRoberts didn't get hurt, we don't know about Hassan.
Right.
We don't even have the opportunity to see Hassan Whiteside. So even in the struggle, even when good teams struggle, if you're a good team that struggles 1 year, if you have the right scouting in place and the right, you know, right leadership in place, you'll always find a way to figure things out. And in Miami's case, that's been the narrative for 20 right. years now. And so this is how they fell into those guys like Johnson and Whiteside and others. So even in this year's struggle, the positive here is that they're trying to build a bench, a second unit for next year. And in addition to having that starting five you just mentioned, you know, with Dragic and Whiteside and all the guys you mentioned, Miami will have depth. I mean, let's not forget, Josh McRoberts was playing very well before he got hurt again. He had finally figured it out. His foot issues are starting to heal up, and then he got hurt. You know what I'm saying? And then you have Mario Chalmers, which I've said all along, you know, everybody keeps saying, oh, Mario Chalmers is frustrating. Yes, he is frustrating. I get it. But I've always said, when that guy has a defined role on this team, whether it be with LeBron, without LeBron, you know, he always seems to play well. Like, go figure, he's playing a lot better now because you have a point guard in Dragic now. So now Mario Chalmers now into that a la six-man role that I said was catered for him, you know, even going back to the last offseason. So I think Miami is doing something here that is going to be a long-term beneficial right. for them. And build that second unit.
And I think it's you mentioned a good point there regarding the system that's in place here, and you can't overstate how important that is. You know what separates a team like Miami from other perpetually rebuilding teams like Minnesota or Philadelphia is one, that they have a plan, and two, that there's a consistent message there from the front office, all the way from the ownership group to the team president, everybody on even the coaching staff. They know what they're working towards. There's a consistency there, and that, you know, lends itself into some success, not just in the short term, but in the long term. They always have their eye on a bigger prize. And for Miami, unlike those other teams, it's always about bringing a championship. They know what it takes. They know that you might have some off years. You might have a lost season like this one. But overall, it's always about getting back to that plateau of a championship. And that's the goal, and it's always been the goal since Pat Riley joined Miami in 1995.
Right, exactly. Let's talk a little bit about Hassan Whiteside. He's been one of the stories of the year. You can argue he might be the most improved player in the league this year. I mean, obviously other players have a stake that too, but that could be a discussion we can have. But recently there's been a little bit of a disturbing trend with Hassan Whiteside. He's been ejected in two games in the last week. He was suspended for the game last night against Brooklyn. Thank God Miami won that game last night, because that would have been a larger issue. So there's been a lot of questions about Hassan Whiteside as to, you know, can you trust him to be the guy moving forward? Are you? I know on the last podcast you actually did mention something about how there's a couple of issues with Hassan that you saw. At the time, we were like, oh, well, you know, let it go. But now that you've seen some of the maturity stuff come up to light now recently on a national stage, what do you – do you, if you're Miami, do you still trust us on Whiteside? Do you think they can still figure this out going forward?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that you brought it up, because it's one of the few predictions for this season that I've actually come through on. So I'm glad you brought it up. But other than that, I think Miami has no choice at this point. But I mean, obviously they have a choice. But I think they feel confident enough in that their development system, the leadership they have from Pat Riley to Spoelstra to Juwan Howard and Alonzo Mourning, they have guys there, and even Udonis Haslem. It was a very encouraging thing there to see Haslem follow Whiteside towards the locker room after he cold clocked Kelly Olynyk a couple games ago. And you wonder what, I mean, we can talk about the hit itself, but yeah, I think it's obviously we've dissected it enough. I think the national media has already done so. It was a dirty play. I know he was frustrated. I know he's been consistently frustrated for most of the season, but you just kind of have to move past it. You can't let that get to you, because if not, like the team, like Dwayne Wade mentioned publicly to the media, you're costing your team. There are guys sacrificing on a nightly basis, playing through injury, playing through pain, and he can't afford to take a night off like that just because of a lost temper. But from Miami's perspective, I think they're confident enough in the system they have in place, the leadership they have there, and they'll continue to work with him. Now, whether or not Whiteside even resigns with Miami past next season, that's a whole other issue. But I think when you're looking in the short term, Whiteside's a part of the plan. Now, you know, you and I both have talked about the comparison to Isaac Austin in the past.
Yes.
You know, I don't know that Riley is going to pull a Sam Presti type move and unload Whiteside next season unless Whiteside and his representation start voicing some displeasure and indicating that they want to get a long-term deal, maybe a max contract. You know, we're not quite sure what to do about the Whiteside situation, if you want to call it that. You know, we're hoping that this remaining month or whatever the season, if they make it into the playoffs, that's a whole other story. But we're hoping that he'll continue to grow and show some further development. Next offseason, this summer, maybe he'll, you know, start voicing some concerns about a long-term deal. Maybe he'll make it known publicly that he wants a big max contract or something along those lines. That would seem a little ludicrous, but we're seeing some of it now in Los Angeles with DeAndre Jordan. This is a guy who wants a max contract. So I don't know if he's part of their long-term plans, but I think in the short term you certainly want to continue to develop a guy like Whiteside because he's brought so much to the table. He's having a historically great season. It's been impressive. Nobody really expected this kind of production from him, but I think you can't just pass it up. You have to take advantage of it while you have it here on the roster.
Right. My thing was coming to the process with him. It's like, look, if he could be Tyson Chandler, I'm happy with that.
Right.
If his ceiling is Tyson Chandler type DeAndre Jordan, I am more than happy with that because he provides a need that Miami hasn't had in quite a while. Even through the
LeBron. Would you say he's better than those players at this point?
I can argue it. I wouldn't go so far to say that only because the sample size doesn't really match
right.
up. But I will say the upside is a lot more greater because he has shown to be a guy that can actually have a repertoire on the offensive side of the ball. It's a matter of getting it pulled together. And once again, the sample size has not worked out yet because you're looking at 2 months versus, or 3 months versus, you know, Chandler's been in the league almost 10 years and, you know, DeAndre Jordan's been in the league a couple years as well. So the sample size is the only thing I would go against him. But that being said, what I will tell you about Whiteside, and at the time when it happened, the last ejection, not the one in Phoenix, the one this past Monday, what I will say was that, you know, I was frustrated at the time because the timing was bad. Because credit to Boston for winning that game. But you can argue if he's in that game, even though the Heat were down by 8-7 points at that time, whatever, you know, it was a grind. You can argue if he's in that game, they probably win that game also against Boston. You can argue.
No doubt.
You know, so you add into the fact that Miami was already going to the game already behind the ball. They're already in the 9th seed in the East, which obviously, if you do the math, and anybody that knows basketball, number 9 means you're not going to the playoffs. So the record. So you lost a game. Don't you get ejected from a game that we needed? It's a game against a team that's in contention. Then you get suspended for this, you know, for the next game against a team that's also in contention for a playoff spot. So it's one of those things where the timing can be worse. I think that was the frustration part of it. That said, I think it's been made a bigger of a deal because guess what? Whiteside is kind of like is a Riley guy in a sense because Riley loves those tough guys. Pat Riley is the same guy that has made it, you know, told players on both Miami and New York that if a guy falls down, if an opposing guy falls down, do not help him up. You know, so I think in the back of his mind, Riley kind of likes the toughness that Whiteside provides to his team. Now, at the same time, it's about the maturity level. Can he know when to pick his points, when to be aggressive, when not to be aggressive? Boston was a bad idea. The one in Phoenix was it didn't bother me because you know what? That was a back and forth where Len was, you know, it was back and forth. That will happen on Monday because Boston was
right. And I agree with you there. I think that's the disparity there, and I think that's where I have to disagree a little bit. That Riley would want him within context to keep control.
Right.
It's one thing to, you know, retaliate for a player against a player like Len, who's known as being maybe a little bit sharp in the elbow area. You know, he's a little, I wouldn't go so far as to say dirty, but let's say he's physical. And it's a different league in terms of how it's officiated. You know, you can't just go and take action like that whenever you feel like there, you know, something has been unjustly called or if you're not getting the call. Now, part of the issue with how Whiteside retaliated against Olynyk, it was uncalled for. You know, as Olynyk told the media after the Boston game, he didn't know where it came from. They weren't jawing at each other. There wasn't any kind of overt physicality there. So it was a bit surprising to see how he'd react there.
Right.
Now, I did go back a little bit to see what happened prior to that based on a tweet from Bill Simmons. I don't know if you saw it or not. But
no.
Basically, he said that the few seconds preceding the Olynyk hit, you could tell that Whiteside was getting frustrated. So I went back a little bit further, and in the couple of minutes before he delivered the hit to Olynyk, he had lost Olynyk completely on defense. And Olynyk hit a wide open three-pointer. He was wide open again for another three-pointer that he wound up missing. Then he wound up getting completely, you know, boxed out in a couple of ensuing possessions for Miami. And then on the following possession, he took the ball into the hoop and he got stripped by, I think, Isaiah Thomas. He started arguing the foul call, didn't get it in his favor, looked over to the sideline, saw Chris Anderson being ready to be subbed in for him, and he got a little pissed off. He got a little frustrated. And for whatever reason, he just took it out on Olynyk. And you could see the body language from him. And I know that's, you know, pretty weak and you don't want to be cliche about body language, but he knocked Olynyk to the ground and immediately walked over to the bench. Like, he didn't wait for a call.
Yeah, yeah, that I noticed. And that was very stark to me when I saw that part. Like, he pushed him and walked away. So basically what you're saying is the difference between this one and the one against Len last week was the fact that Len was a back and forth. This was pure frustration on the back and forth. No, and see those things. See, Heat fans, and look, I don't be that Heat fan. It's like, well, you're being picky. Well, look, I know we're narrowed by the double doubles, but those things there, those people ask, well, why did Whiteside, you know, why is he not on the team? Why is it stuck to a team? Well, that's why. You're seeing right why teams don't trust that guy. It's things like that. And like I said, it could work out, but it's as Dwayne Wade said, and by the way, I love what Wade did.
Oh, yeah.
That's leadership. You know, putting it out there in the media, you know, it's on him. The time is yours. If you want the brass ring, it's all yours. You got to grab it, man.
Yeah, he hasn't made a statement like that against him. I mean, he's been notoriously quiet in the media throughout his career, but he hasn't said anything like that since Michael Beasley, and that was an example of a knucklehead scenario right there. And so, if he feels like he needs to call a player out in the media, you know, clearly there's a problem in place there. So I'm glad that Wade did it. I'm glad that other players have made a point of pointing out, even Beasley himself. I mean, this is a guy who's had some maturity issues, and he pointed out the fact that, look, you know, he's gotta rein himself in a little bit. You can't get lost out there. You have to be staying in the moment, and I'm glad to see that that's in place there. I'm looking for him to bounce back. You know, I know he had some comments after the whole Phoenix situation. This is Whiteside, where he said, violence isn't the answer. I've learned my lesson. Clearly he didn't, but I think this is a little different. I'm optimistic that he's going to stay out of trouble for the rest of the year.
Me too. I am. And you just tease on next segment because Michael Beasley, you know, the theme of coming home now, you know, LeBron goes home and KG goes home and, you know, all this stuff. Michael Beasley comes home to Miami again for the third time.
Unprecedented.
You know, I mean, like I said, it's been a long time since we've and it's funny, we've been doing, you and I have been doing this new thing on HotHoops.com, hot and cold series we do every week, you know, it's a lot of fun, back and forth we do, a little banter. Our first one actually was all Michael
Beasley.
And, you know, I mean, he's already earned a second 10-day contract with Miami. You know, I think he's looked pretty good. Look, he's never going to be a defensive stalwart, obviously. Let's get it out of the way. But I think what I'm seeing differently from Beasley now than the first two stints here in Miami is the effort and the willingness to try harder. And I think you're seeing desperation. Pat Riley, I mean, like, Spoelstra's an extension of Pat Riley. I mean, he has no style, but it's still an extension of Pat Riley. You know, those guys feed off players like Beasley. You know, guys who are desperate to stay in the league to make a point. You know, how do you think Udonis Haslem got a job in Miami? Right. He was undrafted. You know, so I think those guys do have value, and this is why I thought when they signed him that I thought it was kind of a decent idea to bring him in to see where it sticks. Plus, we need some offense, dude. The guy can at least provide you 10, 15 points a game.
And that hasn't even been the best thing that he's provided. It's been the defense, which is very, very surprising. Yes, I mean, exactly. I remember I was watching the game against the Nets last night, and you know, Tony Fiorentino said, look at that incredible defense by Michael Beasley, the first time that's ever been said on air, ever. In his, you know, 6-year career, I don't think anybody's ever said incredible defense by him, but he was. He kept his feet. He moved along the baseline. I think he wound up stripping a player at that point. I mean, it's just, it's really impressive. You're right that maybe he's not going to necessarily be a Lou Alden type perimeter defender, but he has the physical tools. He has the length. He's got the hops. He can stay with an opponent if he's concentrating and engaged, and that's what we've seen from him. And you're absolutely right in bringing how Miami's always been able to take advantage of players that are desperate. I mean, we've seen it even recently with a guy like Chris Anderson, who was facing, you know, potential jail time for a scandal that wound up clearly, you know, not ever having taken place. But, you know, he was out of the league for a number of years. Nobody wanted to take a chance with him. All of a sudden, Miami brings him in right before that wonderful 27-game win streak a couple of seasons ago, and he was a key component of a championship-winning team. So you've seen this consistently from Pat Riley all the way through his Miami tenure, but even before that in New York when he brought on guys like John Starks, Anthony Mason, etc. So this has just been a theme for his career, and it makes sense. You know, guys, you know, part of the problem in today's league, as it's changed, you know, over the past decades, is that these guaranteed contracts will result in less effort. You know, that's just human nature. It's like you're already going to get your money. What's the point in having to bust your ass every day, you know, to get the money that you're already going to be paid for anyway? It's not the same way it was in the 60s and 70s when guys had to struggle just to get paid. And that wasn't even to live like the luxurious life that they live nowadays. It was just to get by. So it's changed completely. You want to be able to have a player that's a little desperate because those are the ones that are going to give more effort on a nightly basis. And we're seeing that from Beasley. He's been much more mature. He's talked about wanting to set a better example for his kids, wanting to be able to be there and provide for them.
Yeah, that was that comment there showed me a lot. Like you said, you know, cussing on the court and this kind of thing and not wanting to do certain things on the court because his daughter, you know, being able to see that. You know, that was startling to me. I was like, wow, this could be a changed man here. And I think he's worth the investment. And I think he maybe if he continues to play well like this, he may have found a permanent home in Miami going forward. I think he could fit this team moving forward. And the thing is to Beasley, I think we look at a lot of Heat fans, a lot of us, we look at Beasley as a top tier guy. Not top tier. Well, I mean, in terms of like his draft stock, I mean, he's number 2 pick in the draft in the 08 draft. You know, so we look at him as he should be averaging this kind of amount of points. He's no longer a guy that I believe can be a sixth man or none of that. I think if he's your eighth or ninth best guy on the team, though, he's way more effective, and you're seeing that here now with this latest stint.
Yeah. Do you see him sticking around for the rest of the season once his second 10-day expires?
Yeah, I do. I mean, even last night, I mean, he got into foul trouble, had a horrible offensive game, but effort and those things don't go unnoticed by Spoelstra and company.
Right.
Effort.
Yeah, he didn't even wind up taking a whole heck of a lot of shots either. But he's playing much more in control. He's not jacking up shots there. You know, it's a nice transition for him, and I think the fans who have always been so supportive of his ten years.
Yeah, he's a little cult following down here. He's a little cult following down in Miami. I mean, even our writers, you know, here at HowToHoops.com have been written quite a few columns on him since.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a tantalizing mix of talent and strangeness and everything else. I mean, he's just such a bizarre. He's such a bizarre talent and personality, but you kind of want to see him. You don't want anybody to struggle, and you kind of want to see him thrive. But I like with him that he always walks that fine line there. It's always interesting to see him, like, 'cause he's so emotive, you know. He's so demonstrative out in the court, and even when, you know, during that Phoenix altercation with Hassan Whiteside and Alex Len, you know, you kind of see him, you know, pumping his fists a little bit, like he's engaged, like almost like a fan. Like he likes seeing that kind of physicality out there, and that's hilarious. I think that's why a lot of people love him down here in South Florida.
And I think the effort thing, the fact that granted they played 2-3 zone most of the night, but that Kings game back on Saturday, the fact that he was willing to go, you know, blow to blow with DeMarcus Cousins, and I mean that, look, Cousins is a monster, and I know it's hard for Beasley to hold his own against that guy, but the fact that he was willing to do it and he tried his best and the effort was there, he got into foul trouble, obviously he actually fouled out of that game, but the fact that he was showing the effort, to me, it resonated in my mind. Plus, he had a great game, too.
I was counting on him starting last night against Brooklyn because I thought Chris Anderson might not be available due to his ankle sprain. But I was curious to see how he tried to contend against Brook Lopez and Mason Plumlee, because that probably would not have been a matchup in his favor. But still, you're absolutely right. I mean, he's trying, and that's something that we haven't always seen from him. Even last season, and I know that's part of the problem, is that he seems to have gotten all these second, third, fourth, fifth chances. It's very bizarre, but at the same time, you hope that he's showing, finally able to take that next leap in his development, showing a little bit more maturity. And I liked what I've seen so far. We haven't seen that. Last year from Beasley, he was that energizer bunny off the bench where he was coming in and, situations there. I think I recall his first actual, long stint on the floor was in a game against Toronto where we were down 10 to 12 at one point. And he comes in there and he just puts up 10 quick points, right off the bench. He was shooting at an incredible rate. If you recall, he was like uber efficient right off the bench, And so he was just that kind of Vinny the Microwave kind of player there, where he's going in and lighting up an offense. But it was great. But at the same time, he was still having his problems defensively, and that's why he didn't play as the season went on. By the time the playoffs rolled around, he wasn't getting any burn at all. Now you see him there, and again, you're not going to count on him for a big defensive stop the way you would, LeBron James on Tony Parker type situation, but you don't feel necessarily that bad having him out there. Is he still going to have lapses? Sure. But even LeBron James, one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, had numerous defensive lapses last year. So I'm okay with it. I want to see him thrive. I want to see him succeed in Miami.
Absolutely. All right, let's look at the playoff picture, because we're in a tight race with pretty much four or five of the teams. Obviously, Indiana, Charlotte, Miami themselves, of course, in this, Boston, Brooklyn, vying for those last two spots in Eastern Conference. Miami right now currently sitting at 29-35 this year. They got, I believe, 18 more games to go for the season. They played Toronto this Friday at Toronto, which is actually kind of strange because the first time they met Toronto was actually, I think, game number three of the year or some of that, or game six of the year, but they beat them. So it's been the first meeting in a while. Toronto's been struggling the last couple of weeks. But I want to discuss the playoff picture because Indiana's on a roll. Indiana actually has the best record in the league since February 1st. So the assumption is now the Pacers pretty much – I don't want to assume anything, but the vibe is that Indiana is probably a guarantee to get one of those two spots because they're playing good basketball. Paul George is – I disagree with this wholeheartedly. I think Paul George is supposed to come back at some point this month or next month before the year's over. So, looking at the schedule ahead, we have Toronto on Friday. I don't know. I'm assuming we're doing this podcast on Monday or Tuesday, depending on if we get it in before then. The Cavaliers on Monday next week. LeBron comes back here again. So two tough games ahead of us. Two teams that represent two of the top four teams in the Eastern Conference. So this is why I believe that game, that win last night against Brooklyn, was huge. Because, I'd be hard pressed to see us winning both these games in the next 5 days.
I'm not as concerned with the teams below us. I don't think either Brooklyn or Boston has enough in place.
It's Charlotte.
Charlotte and Indiana, right? I mean, I think if we're talking about, I think best case scenario, we could possibly get up to the seventh seed if we go in a real impressive role there. But, what's the possibility that Milwaukee might drop altogether out of the playoff race?
They have started, but they're over 500. I mean, they still have at least a 4 or 5 game lead on Indiana alone.
Yeah, right? I mean,
I'll check it in a second.
Yeah, no, I'm curious to see because Indiana seems. I think they've been buoyed by the possibility of Paul George coming back, even if he's not actually going to make it back in time. There's just been something invigorating about seeing him out on the floor practicing with a team, and that's. That's scary because that means that it's not a talent issue, but it's more of an emotional one, and then that's where they become much more dangerous. So I agree with your assessment that they're liable to hang on to one of those last couple of spots in the Eastern Conference standings. So you look at Charlotte then, and they've been playing well, and that's without their arguably their best player. Kemba Walker's been missing. He's finally come back to play.
Who came back last night? Yep.
Finally, and surprisingly, they lost though. But moreover, though, I don't know what's going to happen long term, but I know Al Jefferson did hurt himself during the game last night where they lost to the Sacramento Kings. So I'm not sure if he's going to be part of the picture for the next few weeks. If that's the case, then that certainly gives Miami a good opportunity to try and work their way up and put a nice firm hold on that eighth spot there, because otherwise I don't know that they're going to be able to climb past Indiana.
Real quick, Milwaukee, you mentioned Milwaukee. Milwaukee still has a 4.5 game cushion over Indiana. So, barring a catastrophic collapse by the Bucks, I don't see that really.
But they've gone 3-7 over the last 10 as compared to Indiana, who's gone 9-1 over the last 10. I mean, this.
Milwaukee didn't win last night. So, any victory Milwaukee gets from this point on, it's a big deal because they'll stay a game ahead, a plus one ahead of that team. But. It is possible. I mean, Milwaukee has a lot of injuries. They remember that trade they had with, you know, recently with Phoenix, you know, getting rid of Brandon Knight. It's a lot of things going on there. So they've come back to the pack a little bit. I just don't see the switcheroo happening. It's too late in the year. But what I will say with Miami, the schedule is somewhat, you know, reading the schedule earlier today, and, you know, let me get this real quick, the notes here. This is the rest of the March they have. They play Cleveland, Portland, Denver, Detroit, and San Antonio. So there's a lot of winnable games there.
Oh, not against the ones that you mentioned.
I'm sorry. This is actually the home games. I apologize.
Yeah, but that doesn't even mean anything, though. It's one thing in the past you could have said, well, the home games are going to be a substantial boost, but their record has been worse at home than it has away. So, I mean, they're not quite road warrior status.
That is true.
But they don't exactly enjoy any kind of advantage by playing at the American Airlines Arena. So you have to worry about, you know, somebody was mentioning the Cleveland Cavaliers game, and I was saying, well, you know, the Cavaliers are locked in. They're on a mission. I don't see Miami having any chance against them. And they're like, well, Miami's at home. And I'm like, so, I mean, that doesn't mean anything.
Ten of the last 19 games were at home.
Yeah.
That's 18 games were at home. Nine last 18 games were at home. But the 14, 18 are now at AAA. So it doesn't say much. But there are some winnable games in that process, though. So I think that's the advantage they do have going forward. And then you mentioned the Al Jefferson injury. If that lingers into April, then Miami has a great shot. Although I will say Boston's playing some good basketball too, though. Even though they did lose last night, but they. They're playing to the basketball. They won last night. I'm sorry, they won last night.
Yeah, they beat Memphis. If you had to make a prediction, where do you see Miami winding up at the end of the season?
Seeding wise, I think they'll get in the playoffs. Seeding wise, Indiana's playing some good basketball, man. I mean, Indiana's a real team. You know, like if Paul George was here all year long, they're a top four team in the Eastern Conference. Period. They are. Paul George is that much of a difference to that team. So the fact that 29-34 would up Paul George, you know, and for a team that we all thought was dead to rights, you know, before the year even started, it's truly amazing. So I think the eighth season is going to be what Miami's going to be. I just don't see enough consistency from the Heat team to put together a winning streak. They haven't done that all year long since the beginning of the season. So that's what's throwing me off. You know, whereas Indiana's shown that now that they won six games in a row. So I would put my money on Miami being the eight and Indiana seven. Which I want to ask you a quick before we go. If you're, I mean, it's Atlanta's going to be the number one seed. They're 10 ahead of Cleveland. As great as Cleveland's playing, they're 10 ahead of Cleveland. With the tiebreaker, by the way, too, if you want to go further than that. If you're Miami, though, would you rather play the Hawks or the Cavaliers?
Oh, I'd rather play the Cavs. I'm sorry. Absolutely. The Cavs? I think they match up. I think they match up better. I think Lou Alden can harass LeBron James enough so that he's not necessarily as dominant as he's been in the past. I like the Whiteside advantage over Mozgov. I think Dragic and Kyrie Irving aren't a wash, but that's not as lopsided a matchup as if it had been Norris Cole starting in place. Dwayne Wade is probably still a better player than J.R. Smith is. So, I mean, they're a deeper team, and they'll have home court advantage. But I think the emotions there would be so much in Miami's favor. I would say that I don't know that they'll necessarily pull off an upset there, but they could take them. They could take them seven games. They could take them seven games. I think the system of play from Atlanta being as Spursy as it's been, I think they'll
I like that. Yeah, I like that.
It is. It's not only that, but that it's good. Also it's so it would be so lopsided in their favor that they might sweep Miami. If they met Atlanta in the playoffs, that would be a sweep.
I would say five, but I was going to say 5-2. Actually, Cleveland would be the better matchup too. I actually agree with you on that one, just because of the emotional. You mentioned everything I was going to say, emotional factor, and if CB was in the lineup, man, good God, this could go. I mean, this could be Miami winning the series altogether because, like I said, Cleveland's good. I made a point on my radio show a few months ago that when the Cavs are struggling, that people are gonna the Cavs are so bad right now that people, when they start winning games, which I expect them to do, which they're doing now, that they're gonna underrate the Cavaliers. Sure. They're not underrated. They're doing what they're supposed to do, okay? You got LeBron James, you got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. They're supposed to do this, okay? So, I mean, this is no surprise. The question of Cleveland is going to be, you know, more so those other two guys. I trust LeBron James. We know that. We've had 4 years here. He did the thing here. It's those other two guys I'm worried about. If I'm a Cavs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think Kevin Love can be gone, too. I think Kyrie Irving is made of a little sterner stuff, but I think Kevin Love can be harassed. I mean, could you imagine Udonis Haslam guarding Kevin Love and just, you know, the playoffs are a completely different animal than the regular season there. And we could see Haslam just harassing the hell out of Kevin Love to the point where he just erases them all together. I mean, it could be a pretty good boost for Miami. I mean, it's an interesting matchup and certainly the sexiest matchup. I just don't see it happening. I'm actually looking at the lineup, the schedule right now for Miami. I got to be honest with you, Ernest. It's a murderer's row there, man. I don't see Miami making the playoffs.
Well, then who's well, you mentioned Charlotte and their issues going forward. You think Charlotte still
I think they've got enough in place. I don't know what the long-term prognosis is for Jefferson, but if he's even a little bit available, they should be able to at least keep pace. Whereas with Miami, looking at the last few games of the year, I don't see it happening. They've got a long road trip there where they go to Oklahoma City, they go to Milwaukee, they go to Boston, they go to Atlanta. I mean, that's tough. Then they have another three-game road trip against Cleveland, Detroit, and Indiana. They've got home games against Charlotte, Chicago, Toronto, and Orlando. I mean, even Orlando, you'd think that's a team that we could easily get by. They've always had a matchup problem for us, you know? I mean, Vucevic has made a career and made several tens of millions of dollars off of his matchups against Miami. Even the last game of the season at Philadelphia, that's not necessarily a given. So I'm genuinely concerned for Miami's playoff future.
Well, I will say Charlotte has another five-game road trip coming up next week out west, so that could either be hey or nay for their chances. But we'll see.
Absolutely.
Anyway, Dave, it was awesome. Yes,
always look forward to it.
Haley, I miss you. I hope we get have you back next pod. That was episode 14 of the Triple H podcast, and we're out.
You got it, man.
Can you feel the heat down in your soul?
I feel the heat down in my soul.
Can you see the heat there in control?
I see the heat there in control.
Can you feel it?
I feel it.
Can you see it?
I see it.
It's Miami Heat. We can be beat. It's Miami Heat. Yeah.